My name is Owen Flynn and welcome to episode 121 of the Trail Running Ireland podcast, sponsored by New Leaf Online Health Store. In this week's show, we've Rene Bourque from Running Coach Ireland talking to us about cracking the code for aerobic development. And we talk about how it felt to win the 80k at Ecotrail Wicklow with this year's champ, Muireann MacDonald. Everyone, get your running gear on. Let's go. Hey guys, great to be back on the airwaves, and a big thank you to kick off the show to our sponsor this month, New Leaf Online Health Store, who have been fantastic supporters of the podcast over the last few years. You might remember from last year that New Leaf is owned by Imra runner and UTMB finisher Mairead O'Keefe, and Mairead and the team at New Leaf have set up a 10% discount code for all of our podcast listeners. So if you want to stack up on any of the top range of endurance nutrition brands such as NAC or Tailwind, or need advice on supplements and want to get some supplements for your training, pop over to newleafonline.ie, use the code FUELUP, lowercase or uppercase, FUELUP, and you'll get 10% off, and also, of course, be supporting an Irish local business and an Irish mountain runner in Mairead as well. Before we kick things off with our interviews, a shout out to all of the Irish World Championship team members who are hopefully beginning to return to full training after their recovery period after the World Championships in Canfranc at the end of September. Well done, guys, on representing the country with pride again. You can get the full set of the Irish team results on the IMRA forum. And for example, the Evergreen, the legendary Sarah McCormick, was the top performer on the women's team with a 41st from 107 competitors in the vertical 6.4k uphill only race. And on the men's side, it was Jared Martin, who we had on the show a couple of months back. He was 43rd from 142 competitors in the classic up and down 14.3 kilometer race. And I know for people that maybe aren't familiar with the World Championships, 41st, 43rd, they mightn't seem like top results, but the championships, the standards are just getting higher and higher. And to be honest, if you can get up towards the top half of those fields, you are competing against the top four runners from all the big mountain and trail runner countries, the big and the small countries from all around the world. So for all of our Irish runners to go out there to give their very, very best, to be up in the top half of fields, Sarah and Jared there up in the 40s, really, really good performances, guys, and well done, and best of luck with your recovery. I look forward to seeing you all in action, I think, at the European Championships next year, and then the World Championships, if I'm not mistaken, in 2 years' time again in South Africa. Before we call in Rene for our coaching slot, a sincere thanks to all of the group of patrons who support the show with the price of a gel per month, and really appreciate it, guys. And a special thank you to Vicky O'Donnell, who became a Patreon since our last episode. And guys, if you have been a listener for a while, if you like what we do, if you would like to help out the podcast like Vicky did, do please pop over to Patreon Trail Running Ireland when you have a moment, and for the small donation of the price of a gel per month, that will help keep the show going all year round. Okay, let's dial in Rene for our coaching slot about how to optimize that aerobic engine. Rene Bourque from Running Coach Ireland, great to have you back on, buddy, and great to see that you're keeping well after a very busy weekend. The last time I saw you, Rene, I think the last time I saw you was about 10 past 8 or so on Saturday 2 weeks ago. The daylight had gone, all the runners pretty much were all home in Bray after a day of fantastic and exciting racing in Ecotrail Wicklow 2025 with record numbers, Rene, and I'm sure you must have been very, very happy
with today's work. But I'm sure it wasn't easy at times for you either, and making sure that everybody got home safe and keeping an eye on 80 kilometers of trails. Not easy, not an easy job.
No, it was a busy day and a busy period, you know. So I've been a little bit of in what I call my low energy mode since, you know. I try to do that because I know I think everybody should do that, right? That, you know, whenever you have a busy period, you have to make sure you repay that kind of debt in the weeks after, or I think eventually it comes back to bite you. You know, you get a big flu or something in the middle of the winter as kind of payback for your sins. So I try and do it proactively, you know, just by slowing down a little bit. But it was brilliant because, you know, as I said, we had nearly 1,900 people signed up for the race. I think there was over 1,400 starters, which is, it's a really big field here. And that's something I think everybody who was involved with the team has worked hard to achieve. And I know a lot of the people who work on the marketing side, you know, they're really, really excited about the idea of trying to see, can we crack 2,000? Because that's never been done. You know, it will be just part of, you know, for trail running overall, you know, moving up the glass ceiling, you know. So I think you saw the fun, Owen, as you say. You know, I'm out there trying to sort all the issues, but I think the crack was mighty at the seafront from what I heard.
It was, because between about 12:30 and maybe 2:00, 2:30, Rennie, we just had podium finisher after podium finisher of pretty much all of our races coming through. So there was a great atmosphere there. And of course, it was lashing rain. So myself on the microphone and Nicola, who was from the team as well, on the organization side of things, the two of us were there just trying to make sure that we identified every top three runner coming through and to make sure that we gave them their credit. And here comes the champion of the 19K or the 30K. And so because we couldn't really use our phones, because it was just the rain was so heavy, because the phones would have just broken down, we were just trying to spot people's names and numbers on their actual race number, on their bib, on their clothes. So that was lots of fun and games trying to identify everybody coming through. But it was good crack, Rennie. Everybody was in good form. And then, of course, then at about, 60 seconds to 8:00, our final cutoff time in the evening for the 80K, we had a couple of guys sprinting home to make that, what was it, 12 and a half hour cutoff time. So that was just a really special.
I saw
moment.
It. I think
we had four people. We had two groups of two, one about maybe 30, 40 seconds before 8 p.m. and then another two maybe 10 seconds before 8 p.m. So after 12 and a half hours to get four people sprinting home and
I saw what John Clifford recorded a video of, you know, him trying to kind of encourage them. And then suddenly he noticed, just as he got the first two across the line, that there was actually the two more. And I just walked up. I think I had just dropped in some equipment, you know, from the course and the tent. And I walked over to the finish line actually to get one of the Wycliffe Wolf non-alcoholic beers that they were serving before they closed off. And then I heard the roar and I saw these guys, you know, in their head torches sprint. And I think they literally got over the line like a second before.
They did.
So
they did.
That's kind of, you know, I know cutoffs are cruel, but they're necessary as well, obviously, because of, you know, the road crossing and darkness and all this sort of stuff. But I thought it was a cool thing, you know, that you got to see a sprint like that, a mad scramble to get across the line after, as you say, 12 and a half hours out there.
Yeah, no, it was brilliant. It was a brilliant day. But Rennie, let's crack on to our coaching segment. We know lots of the listeners tune in to hear what you have to say every week or two. And we've got a topic today, Rennie, that we've discussed maybe before, but it's always good to touch on it again, because lots of the athletes that the two of us work with and help with their training and racing, people do struggle with zone one and zone two and trying to understand it, whether they're going too fast, whether they're going too slow. So I think today we're going to try and crack the code for aerobic development and, you know, how slow we need to shuffle. Do we need to shuffle like a zombie or can we, you know, how far can we push our zone two? And I think that's what you wanted to talk about today.
Yes, because you know, one of the things I think no one likes to be told once they ask their coach to review their training, you know, when they review it themselves, is that they're told they're running too fast on their easy runs, you know, because we have both people who are more experienced to do it because they just have to get carried away maybe a little bit, or, you know, they just have a habit of it. But then what we see more, which is where it's a big problem, is that some people, when they start running, they can't actually really run as slow as the tests we do or tests that they do themselves show that they should, you know. So if you actually looked at their aerobic threshold, which we've talked about before, or max fat state and all this, to actually be at that heart rate or that intensity, there are people who need to walk, you know, and it happens especially to beginners, so first-time runners. It happens a lot to people who come into the sport from power sports, you know, like rugby and CrossFit and stuff like that. And it happens to people who've been sick, injured for a long, long time, you know, or severely detrained. And then you come back, and any running pace you can actually kind of naturally get into, you're already in zone three, you know, and whether it's because you measure it with your heart rate or it's because you can feel it, like you can actually feel any running pace, your breathing is not really that comfortable as it should be. And people don't really, we found it doesn't really work to tell people, look, you just have to walk until your heart rate, you know, gets, until you get able to run at the easy heart rate, because that doesn't work either.
Yeah, well, this segment, I might dedicate it, Rennie, to one of my athletes that I coach, great guy, Dave. And Dave hates running slow. He hates running in zone one. He knows the importance of it, but he just feels that, he's even said to me a couple of times, oh, I feel like I'll get injured if I go any slower because it just feels so awkward. And he has an alarm set on his watch that if he goes beyond 152, which is more or less the top of a zone two, that his alarm will go off and beep. So he does try and stick to it. And I do, we always say to him, Dave, slow it down, slow it down. So this is going out to all the Daves out there who hate going into zone one, but it is necessary because maybe you could bring us through, Rennie, to start off the conversation today. The three systems that our running performance depends on. You could call them three systems, or you could even call them three limiters.
Yeah, and we've alluded to this a little bit before, but I think it can be complicated. So let's try and make it a little bit more simple, hopefully, today. So your performance depends on three systems, and whichever one is the weakest is the one that's going to limit what you can do. So one is your oxygen supply. Okay, so how well can your heart and lungs pump the oxygen-rich blood out to your muscles? Okay, and that's what most people know as the cardiorespiratory system. That's one thing. That's the most obvious, you know. Most people think that's the main problem. Then oxygen utilization is a little bit less known. So that's when that oxygen-rich blood actually gets into your muscle cells, how quickly can they use that oxygen to create energy? So that has to do with things we've mentioned before a lot, like mitochondria. How many do you have? How healthy are they? Capillary efficiency, you know, how many capillaries do you have, and so on and so forth. So the final one, which has become very in vogue now, and I think we'll probably talk a bit about over the winter and more, is mechanical durability. You know, so that's the integrity of your musculoskeletal system. So
Yes.
how your muscles, tendons, joints, how much can they handle without breaking down? So if you wanted to use kind of a engineering or a car analogy, that means you can be limited by the size of your engine,
Yes.
your fuel efficiency, or the strength of your chassis.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's kind of the basic picture that people need to start with in mind.
Yeah, so maybe we could give an example. So say, for example, you're a very quick, fast switch muscle fiber runner. Your engine might be fine, but maybe your fuel system is rubbish, or maybe your durability is rubbish. And Rennie, I can probably relate to that myself because I think I'm predominantly fast twitch. I've got a very good engine. My VO2 max is in the mid-70s, which is fantastic, but my durability has never been that great, Rennie. And you know, I can do a 5K race every week, every 2 weeks. I can do a cross-country race, no problem at all. I can do an uphill only 10K race on the mountains, no problem. But when I go beyond that, it gets harder and harder, and I don't enjoy it as much because just the durability isn't there. So you have different types of profiles, don't you? Your fast switch dominant athletes that maybe have certain advantages, but they can have big disadvantages as well.
Yeah, so for instance, like kind of, if you're a quick and, you know, a twitchy runner, you know, you can have an engine, you know, that's really good, but either your chassis could be too weak, which is what you kind of described, or the fuel efficiency is really poor. That's what I see with a lot of people who come from the power sports. So I've had rugby players this year, I've had power lifters this year, and you know, they generally actually have a very strong cardiovascular system in the gym. They have a big heart. You know, they can pump plenty of blood around. That's not a problem. But they have actually good chassis strength, these guys. Not so adapted for running yet, but their problem is that there's no machinery, or there's not enough machinery in the muscles to take the fuel and just constantly turn it into, you know, a consistent supply. So that means the heart rate goes up very, very quickly, and then they just crash, you know. And that means when they go and do their easy runs, even at very kind of low intensities in the beginning, they go right into zone three, like you cut, because the efficiency is not there to actually run in zone one and two. And then you have the problem, well, what are you going to do then? Because the are you just going to say, well, every time you it goes up, walk for a little while until it goes down, and then try and run again? You could do that, or you could say, well, just go walk all the time. And you know, we were laughing before, you know, no one's going to pay a running coach or ask a running coach for advice if he tells them, you know, you just need to go away and walk for 3 months. And that's actually not what we recommend either. That's a better way of trying to tackle that problem.
And you've got maybe two strategies to tackle that problem, Ren. You've got the push strategy and you've got the pull strategy.
Yeah, and that works for all things. Okay, it's not just for zone two. So just in case people are listening and they think, well, it's not a big problem for me. Like if you were trying to improve your zone three or your zone four, push and pull is the same thing. You know, you can use the same strategy, but basically it's whether you attack the problem from above or below. And the way it works with zone two, or with really, really slow running, is that if you just stay consistent in the beginning with your running, even if all the runs are kind of in zone three, because you actually can't run in zone two, your heart rate will still be pushed down over time. So that means about one beat per week is realistic if you're consistent. That's the key. You just need to be consistent instead. And that's why we used to say on the podcast that consistency comes before volume, but it actually comes before zone training as well. That's a big message with that, is that if you come in and all your zones are really tied together, and you know your lowest your zone two pace is actually not running. You know, I see a lot of people come in with your 7 minute, 7.5, 8 minute, 8.5 minute kilometer pace, you know, which is a fast walking pace on the flat. So for them, you know, we might use a bit of what's called run walking, which is the pull strategy. Oh, sorry, so that means every time you go a little bit above, you might just walk, let's say, for a minute, you get it back down, then you try and run again, you keep doing that. That does work, and some people are okay with that, but a lot of our clients feel it's a bit miserable. You know, it's very stop start, you know, it's clunky, and you know, runners kind of, people who want to be runners or who were runners once, you know, and they're trying to get back to it, they kind of feel like a defeat. So that's the push strategy, right? Is but the other one, the pull strategy, is the way to look at that is it's your slowest sustainable run, that's all you focus on. And that's what we tell new clients now. Forget about your zone two heart rate in the beginning. I just want you to run 3 or 4 days a week, you know, to get started. And then you find the slowest pace that still feels like running, you know, and run at that. And we'll do that loads, and you will notice, let's say over 6 weeks, then that the heart rate actually still does come down. Because some people might, if they really pay a lot of attention to what we say on this podcast, might remember that we say, generally speaking, the zone two has to be trained from below. You know, as in to really develop your aerobic efficiency, you have to run under the aerobic threshold. But I find with everything in life, there's always an exception to every rule. I think most people find that if they look as well. And this is the exception, right? Is that when in the beginning, when you actually cannot run in zone two, you can do the slowest sustainable run instead until you start to see a drop. And then eventually you will be able to do it the normal way, you know, where you actually slow down running until you get under the zone two heart rate that you have identified, you know, using a test of some sort.
And the great thing is that it does work. It's sustainable in real life, that strategy that you're talking about. And if you are patient with it, Rennie, you can really see some big improvements, can't you? I mean, say if you are coming in at 8 minutes per kilometer, you can very quickly get down to 7.5, 7 minutes per kilometer. And then if you're coming in faster, some of the top guys in the squad, they might come in and they're top zone 2 pace per kilometer might be, let's say, 4:45.5. And after maybe 6 months, they're down to 4:10 per kilometer, even touching sub 4 minutes per kilometer. So again, if you can be patient with it, that type of strategy, it works very, very well. So it's like give yourself permission to be patient with it. Don't be in a rush. Stop fighting the watch. And what you'll find is that the kilometer splits, the heart rate, they naturally come down. And before you know it, you will look at your watch after 2 or 3 months and you'll see big differences. When you go back to your Training Peaks account or your Excel spreadsheet, look at what you are running for your easy run days 3 or 4 months ago. Look at what you're running now, and you'll get a big reward, or you'll get a big surprise.
Exactly, because the problem with this, as I said, the idea with the push strategy is that you're running, your heart rate gets a little bit too high, and then you kind of push it down by walking. And it's similar if you were, let's say you're trying to improve your 5K pace, you run your 5K pace, and then when you can see, oh, the heart rate's getting too high here, you have an interval break in your interval session, to get it down. So they're the same type of strategy. So it's to try and run more of a pace by pushing your heart rate down with a break when it starts to go off the rails. That works fine with intervals where you're running anyway, because let's say a 5K interval session is quite fast. The problem with if you use too much run walking or all walking, which is what some people might think they have to do, you don't really develop the other parts of that. We were just talking about those limiters. For instance, you mightn't develop the chassis strength that you need to actually keep running, because walking and running are not the same thing. There are some benefits, as we talked about in the last podcast, about walking, but it's not the same stressor. The force in running is way higher. It's a totally different muscle action. It's very plyometric and bouncy and all this. So that means if you don't do enough running, the body doesn't have a time to say, oh, okay, here's an activity. I'm being asked to do it, so I need to build all of the things, musculoskeletal adaptation, so that I get more resistant to this. And as the body gets more resistant, then it becomes more efficient. And that's the reason the heart rate drops with, what we call the that pull strategy, which is the opposite. So the you could say you pull your heart rate down naturally over time by improving your efficiency, by doing what we say the slowest pace you can sustain and still call it running.
That push strategy, Rennie, and you have to be careful not to get confused between the pull and the push, but that push strategy where we are running and then walking, you can use it for special cases as well. And even though it might be very frustrating to walk to keep your heart rate down, it is a good idea to use, for example, when you're rehabbing an injury. For example, when you can't just jump straight back into a 40, 50-minute run, you do need to keep the load low, keep the impact low. And of course, one way to do that is you'll know yourself from your pace, but if you're keeping an eye on your heart rate, once your heart rate begins to go towards that top end zone 2 and above, that's usually a good sign to go back to a walk. And that will help you get through maybe your first week or two of movement, walking, running when you're rehabbing an injury. And there's
Yeah,
other examples as well.
injury rehab is a really good example. So people coming back from cardiac issues, it's been used a lot, to really control that very tightly in the beginning until, steady running becomes an option again. Extreme fatigue is a great example because that's how ultra runners use it. That's how we do in fast packs essentially. Fast packing is just ultra terrain run walking, where you try to minimize the fatigue and the mechanical damage by walking when walking is more efficient. So they're great examples of using it kind of in a more advanced way. And basically, your goal, whatever strategy you end up using, because that depends on your starting point, the goal is that, let's say, the pull strategy that we talked about. So we get a big rugby player in, we see that their heart rate, their, let's say their aerobic threshold heart rate is 140 at the moment. When they run at the slowest pace they feel they can run at, their heart rate is 150. You would basically just want to get them out consistently running at the easiest pace they can until that heart rate drops from 150 to 140. Because then you have your slowest sustainable pace has moved down to the MAF pace or the VT1 pace, the AT, whatever we call it. And that means now you can really focus on proper zones and maybe doing, starting to worry about should we do some zone three work, etc. But it's not worth doing that at all until you get that.
Yeah, until you have that foundation and you have the patience for the foundation that we've spoken about many times before. Maybe a quick question, Rene. Often people might say to us, well, what about when we're on the mountains, when we're out trail running, and when we're going up a hill or when we're on hilly terrain and our heart rate spikes up towards the top end of that zone too? Is that okay? Should we be strictly looking at our heart rate numbers when we're climbing, when we're out on the trails?
Well, the heart rate is delayed, so that's just one thing to keep in mind if the hills are short, right? So by the time your effort goes up on the hill, it can take a minute or two until you actually see the output. That you know, so but that's kind of a little bit separate. In general, when you're doing your aerobic runs, if the climbs are really steep, and you really want to keep discipline, it's better to hike them. But as long as you focus on, your breathing and effort level, do you have conversation level breathing when you're running uphill? It's probably still fine. It's not a big deal, but it's hills are a great kind of excuse to use the run walk strategy without actually losing much. Because you can kind of take the, what would you say? You can take the specific sessions and use to say, okay, in this session, I'm gonna practice running every step, no matter what. You have plenty of time to do that in your quality work. But I know some people like to really practice their technique together with that. That they say, well, part of the reason that a lot of beginners go into zone three and four very quickly on hills is that their technique actually breaks down because they start to take these really long, slow strides uphill. Whereas, if there were studies done on this, if you look at elite runners, they keep much better posture and rhythm on uphills. And that means they get less stress in the heart then. So that is something you could practice. Like if you find like you're walking uphill too easily, any bit of hill to actually be in zone, what do you call it, zone two or lower, you have to walk. But that's not the case maybe when you're on the flat. It could be a sign maybe you're strength deficient, so you should focus more on strength work to overcome the problem. Or you could say, well, maybe it's a technical issue. It's the way I choose to attack the hill. So maybe try and focus a bit more on your posture and try and see can you increase your rhythm, so take smaller steps but more, and will that actually lower your heart rate so that you can run up steep hills in zone two? Because it might not be an issue with fitness, it could be bad habits, but you need to figure that out, by playing around with it a little bit. So that kind of goes all the way back to what's the limiter? What is it that pushes your heart rate up? Is it that you're weak? Is it that you have a technical limitation? Or is it those basic physiological things that you don't have the efficiency to run up hills and use energy cheaply? So very, very quickly at a relatively low pace on gradients, you straight away fly into zone three. And in those cases, you need to use a mixture of the two approaches. Use some run walking, especially on the really long ones, and use some but easy interval training, for instance, could be good. Run uphill for a few minutes, trying to stay just on the border of zone two. And then when you can see, oh, it's coming up, then drop it down. So you push it down and then you go again. And that way, hopefully over a number of weeks, if you do that, your efficiency at that pace becomes cheaper and then your heart rate drops.
I think the big takeaways, Rennie, from today's chat, from today's segment is that if you do have the patience for that run walk strategy, as you've mentioned, or that slowest sustainable running pace strategy, to not to take it as punishment, that it's the foundation of future success. And we've spoken about as well, I think it was one of our podcasts a couple of weeks ago, Rennie, that we said that what we do in the winter time can set us up for great success in the spring and early summer. And say, for example, if this year you have had maybe a couple of injuries, the year hasn't gone as well for you as you would have liked, maybe energy levels are low, life has been a bit stressful, that maybe now going into the winter time when we're coming out of the summer trail racing season, that now is a good opportunity to practice that slow, sustainable running, to tick all your boxes, to develop that mechanical strength, to develop that aerobic strength. And by laying that foundation, to have the patience to lay that foundation, you will set yourself up for a fantastic early 2026.
Yeah, you have to do it whenever you don't have that immediate pressure of having to go out and, you know, prove the end product, you know, or do something at a reasonably high intensity where, you know, you need to practice that. Yeah, so that what it could be for most people, as we said, is usually the winter. A lot of people probably after Dublin, right? 2 weeks or so after Dublin, they start that. But you need to set some time aside to it where you're willing to just muddle along and build this as a bit of a long-sighted thing where if you do happen to jump into races, you have to stop caring, you know, because this is what I think where it often goes wrong is that you know, we know how quickly you improve on zone, let's say 4 and 5 training, but we also know it damages that long-term development and it runs out of steam very quickly, you know, and it predisposes you to injury and all that. But it's very tempting to be pushed into that cycle if there's something coming that puts you kind of under pressure to perform and be out there, or you want to get a quick boost. So you need to take that pressure away for a while, and then you can kind of do it with peace of mind, you know, and you're not worried.
And that's something, Rennie, it's races. I mean, what you're talking about there is races, isn't it? That we need to be manage our racing calendar well and not be sticking a race in every 6 or 7 weeks, because there's no recovery there. Well, there is recovery, but that's all. There's no new foundation being laid. And when you are planning your race calendar for the winter in 2026, to make sure that at least maybe once or twice over the year, you give yourself a good 15, 16-week gap between maybe one priority race and the next. So you have a chance to do what we were talking about today and do 7 to 8 weeks of slow, sustainable running.
Yeah, I think a good way to summarize is, you know, as we've said this before as well, you know, all elite athletes have an off season and they complain that, you know, in many cases, like with soccer and so on, the off season is being destroyed, you know, because the sponsors want more and more entertainment and it's damaging the athletes and it's damaging the product in the end. And so if these, you know, fantastic machines that they are, these elite athletes, that they know you need an off season somewhere. Yeah. Why would we, the rest of us, not? You know, the only way you can get away with it really is if you don't care about results maybe at all, you know, you just want it, you just do it for the crack, it then probably doesn't matter, right? You know, if all you do is you just jump into races, you don't give yourself 100%, it's just a form of entertainment for you, then yes, you don't. But if you're in any way serious about the results, then you have to pick at some stage, as you say there, you know, at least 2 months. 3 would be perfect, but yeah, 2 is a good start.
Okay, well, listen, Rennie, thanks a million, as always, for helping to make the science make sense, Rennie. So appreciate that, buddy. And yeah, we'll talk about it in about a fortnight's time.
Thanks, Owen. All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
For our feature interview this week, it was a real pleasure to see this athlete sprint down the Bray Promenade a few weeks back and take the win at the Eco Trail Wicklow 80K. And just before we chat to Muireann, just to say, guys, that it was really great to see and to chat to lots of the listeners of the show in person that day in Bray. Your support of the podcast means a lot. And with that being said, let's get on with the show and chat to the Eco Trail Wicklow 80K champ, Muireann McDonald.
Muireann McDonald, you're very, very welcome to the show. Champion of Eco Trail Wicklow 2025 in the 80K. Muireann, great to have you on.
Oh, thank you so much, Owen. Thank you.
Well, Muireann, one of the reasons why I wanted to ask you on the show was because I remember sitting down on the Sunday, somewhere the Monday after the race, and, you know, obviously I saw you come home and, you know, we had a bit of a moment, we had a bit of a chat. It was really, really great. But there was a video that went up on social media a day or two afterwards, I think from the Eco Trail Wicklow team. And it was you sprinting down the promenade over the final kilometre. And he just looked so strong, looked so determined. And I said, Jesus, I want to run like that after 80 kilometers. I've got to talk to Moira and find out how she runs like that after 80 kilometers with such strength and vigor in your stride. So yeah, maybe a question to kick things off, Moira. How did you sum up the energy and the power to have such a strong finish? Is it to do with the training? Were you just full of joy, full of emotion? Talk to us about that final kilometer coming down Bray Promenade.
Oh yeah, it's definitely like joy and relief. And just like, I guess the crowds as well were amazing. For some reason, I guess because of the weather, I was just expecting there to be no crowds. I was kind of telling myself it'll probably be quite quiet. Like I was looking at the weather app and I was like, oh my God, like I was even saying it to my boyfriend Nisha. I was like, I don't know if, like, you don't worry if you can't come, because it's actually, it might be really bad, the weather. But of course it actually ended up clearing up in the afternoon. Yeah. And God, the crowds were so good. And I guess since I've done it before, I knew that the finish line was so, so close. And I think by then you're just like, this is the, you just tell yourself, this is the easy part. You just have to finish it now. And I knew as well, a few friends were at the finish line from my running club, Mild Activity. So, and they really helped as well.
Well, talk to us about Eco Trail, because you do have a fantastic relationship with it. You know, when I look up the IMRA website for your results or online, I don't really see much, but when I go to Eco Trail, I see, yeah, you did it in 2022 in the 19K, just to kick things off, maybe. Yeah. Then you were back in 2023. I think you were eighth female athlete home, then a fantastic podium last year. And then you were back again this year and you got the win and a fantastic, wonderful fourth overall. So what is it about Eco Trail and what do you do for the rest of the year?
I guess it's so funny because that 2020 race, the 19K I did, it was a beautiful day. And I remember I got hooked after that. It was just so beautiful. And then 23, the weather was pretty rough. But for some reason, I think I've always enjoyed it. Like there's something about also the proximity of it from home. Like I'm from Dublin myself. So being able to go there it's so simple. I just get the dart. And yeah, I think I've just been so drawn to it. Every race, I've just been like, oh, that was so hard. I don't know if I'll do it again. And then you sign up again a few days after.
Yeah. And do you focus more on Eco Trail? I mean, do you go back 6 months and put a training strategy in place for it? I did see, I think, that you ran the Dublin Marathon a couple of years ago as well. So I don't know if you're road racing during the year or if you're just up in the mountains, biking, hiking. Is there a specific focus for that podium and this year for the win, to go and get the win? Tell us about your build up and how you're so strong to, first of all, to win the race and have that fantastic finish towards the end. Where does it all come from? What's the secret?
I guess what I'd say is I'm like, through the years, I'm more of a road runner, I'd say. I've just been marathon training. I joined a club called Mild Activity, and they're very community driven, and they basically, you just show up, see the same people or new faces, and you just do a run maybe once or twice a week. And I think just building from that community, you just kind of get sucked into it. Like you really start enjoying it. I really started enjoying running, but I guess the trail running was kind of like the addition. So they did trail runs as well, started to do a few of them, was really enjoying it. I also think COVID as well. So I'm a nurse, and like, I remember just needing to go outside was like, one of the priorities for myself. So going to whatever it was, going to Wicklow, or just even cycling was a big thing as well. So I'd say that I was marathon training for all of the races, and Eco Trail was an addition to it, but I definitely would be trail running as well, like over the weekends and stuff like that. It was hard though to kind of fit in a lot of the trail running stuff, especially doing long runs.
Yeah. So was the 80K in 23 and then 24, was that just a race a month before Dublin Marathon? Or is that what happened in those 2 years? That it was so something to do in the lead up to Dublin?
Yeah,
Wow.
basically. Basically, like a lot now, in fairness, trail running has always been like such a fun, I'd always enjoy it. Like 23 was there just to basically complete the 80K. Did it with my friend Laura. 24, I was not expecting at all to podium, and I just did it for fun with a few friends. It was great. That was oh, it was so fun. And yeah, and but then 25 was a little bit different because I think 24, when I got the third, I had it in my head. I was like, maybe if I just try a little, if I just actually focus a little bit more, I might be able to podium. But I am actually doing Dublin Marathon this year, so I guess it was just an addition again, but I was definitely a little bit more focused.
Yeah. So were you maybe, I don't know, every second weekend up the trails of Wicklow and then the alternative weekend doing laps of the famous park on the roads or whatever it might have been? What was that how you approached it or?
Exactly. And the biggest thing is like having other people who are interested. So like my friend Ian from Mild Activity, that club, and JP also from the club. I actually did the Glendalough Clover Relay with them in Imra, and they're fantastic. Very strong. He like Ian did the Backyard Ultra, and this year in Dublin, and JP did. He's a cross country runner, but originally in like in university, but he's a real big trail runner. So I kind of just joined them on their adventures, and then that probably helped me get better.
I suppose that maybe to give myself and the listeners a bit of context, then what type of marathon time have you done, and what are you aiming for this year to try and link the two? What does an 80K Eco Trail champion run on the roads, if we can compare at all? What are your marathon times? What are you hoping for?
So my last one was in Amsterdam last year. That was, I think, 3:13, and I think I'm hoping to I'm praying now, because it's only tapering now to Dublin, that I'll get a sub three, but we'll see.
Just good luck with that. Brilliant.
I
And
know, only that.
the recovery has gone well over the last couple of weeks.
Oh yeah, I had a lovely holiday afterwards. But did very little afterwards. Horizontal time, as I'd like to say it. Like just a lot of rest and recover. Because I think last year, 2024, because my friend Emily and myself did the 80K with a bunch of with a group of us, and we went. We took a few days off. We were like, oh, I think we can go back running again. And then, lo and behold, we got injured both at the same time, and basically did not run for 2 weeks before Amsterdam, but thankfully we were able to run and we were actually okay.
Well, you do realize that there's probably, marathon runners up and down the country who've been maybe trying for years to run sub three, and they're listening to you going, "This girl has just done 80K in Wicklow, then she went on holidays, and she's going to run sub three now in 2 weeks' time."
We'll see.
But sure, just to get back to the race itself, I mean, talk to us about the race, because I know there was a bit of a mess, wasn't there, on the first maybe major junction, where I don't know if you got caught up at that, where I'm not too sure what exactly happened with the steward, but people went the wrong way. And were you part of the group that went the wrong way, or did you manage to stay on track?
So, like, because I've done it so many times, I knew, even though the poor volunteer was saying, go this way, but I was like, that's back to Bray. There's no way that that's the right direction. So, I actually stopped, and I just knew, and then we started like shouting at the other people to go the other way, because we saw them running down
Oh no,
towards Bray. I know, and like my heart goes out to them, because I can't imagine what it would feel like to be the first going down there. But I just knew from the previous times. I know that the route had been altered, I think. before the race, but like I knew that it was the left, not the right. So luckily I
Okay.
didn't go down there.
Yeah. As you move through the kilometers and the mountains, I mean, I presume you were in the lead of the women's race from the very, very start. And again, right up there at the very top of the field. When did you realize actually, well, actually, you know what? Today, I think I might actually get top of the podium today. And I've got a bit of a barrier here. I just need to keep on working hard. But when was that realization?
I think it was maybe it was the 20 to 30K mark. I think I remember seeing Niamh. She was I know I actually do I don't know her personally, but I've like because of my friend doing the Backyard Ultra, I know she does a lot of ultras, and she's in you know she's so present in the trail running scene. So when I passed her, I kind of had a feeling in my head. I was like, if I just keep going and if I keep strong, then who knows what might happen. So, and it's funny, it's like trail running, I've never been in that position before, and it's
Yeah.
so mental. Like, it's like you never know when they could just fly by you, you know, like
Yeah.
you've no idea where you are. So, I just said, look, I just keep going at the pace that I can keep going at, and hope, you know, yeah, just yeah, hope for the best as
Yeah.
well.
Is there any trick to it, Myron? Are you working off heart rate? Are you looking at, or are you working off a pacing strategy, or is it just off feel and you're making sure that you get your carbohydrates into you every half an hour? I don't know, what are you doing from a nutrition point of view? Talk to us about your race tactics, if there was even any, apart from just, head down and running as fast as you could.
I guess what I would do definitely is like go by feel. I knew I think it was I knew the Vartry Reservoir, it's a flat part of the race, and I knew that would be where my strong suit would be, where I could just let the legs basically go flow and just like keep going. And I knew that all my long runs and my marathon training would do me well. Like when I think about other trail runs, like I don't know, Seven Sisters or something like that, like the elevation is crazy, even in the 50K. So like you're looking at 4,000 meters. So for I feel like when you compare other trail races to Eco Trail, it's not as aggressive in terms of elevation. So that probably helped me with the marathon training. So I guess going out there, oh my God, Lucozade was like it really saved me many, many times, especially when I feel like half the race is just like being your like stomach issues, like be like you just don't want your stomach to give out. So it's literally I had like look I gels of course every half an hour to an hour, and Lucozade just sipping at that water. I had biscuits because I just felt like I was like I think that'll be nice on my stomach right now,
Yeah.
and I think that's like that will not make me feel sick basically thinking about it. I
Yeah,
would
yeah.
eat I think I was eating Haribos coming down Bray, so
That was the secret to that sprint finish. I think that to win any big trail race, Marin, I think you do have to be good at running uphill, descending, and running on the flat as well. You obviously have that flat speed on the more forgiving trails from your road marathon training. But would you consider yourself a good climber and a good descender as well?
I'd say I'm a good climber. Descender, I'd say I'm pretty slow. I remember doing a trail race a while ago just for fun in Vancouver, and I can tell you like the Canadians are some different kind of beast when it comes to trail running. Like they were flying down what was like shale. I was shook, but then I realized I was like, okay, this is obviously like, yeah, there's different, different levels of trail running that I'd like to get to.
Yeah, and I suppose just say, with more time in the mountains, you can work on that technical descending. For me, that's always been the hardest part, Mirren, absolutely. And then in the overall race, Mirren, you were fourth overall. I mean, for someone who says that maybe you need to improve your descending, even with that, you were still fourth out of a field of, I think, of 142 finishers. And one thing that I wanted to ask you was, when you did cross the finish line, you know, I said, our wonderful champion, and I said, and also a fantastic fourth place overall. And then a very good friend of mine from Imre came up to me and said, Owen, I need to pull you up just there on your commentary at the finish line. You said that Mooran was fourth overall, but it's not necessary to say that Mooran was fourth overall because she wasn't racing in the overall field. She was racing in the women's field. And that's all that you need to mention, that there's the men's field and there's the women's field, and comparing the women and the men together isn't necessary. It's not needed. I didn't agree, Mooran. I thought it was a very valid point to tell everybody that you were fourth overall. And that was said out of great respect and admiration. I don't know if you have any strong views on it either way, or maybe no views at all, and that you're just happy to be the winner and to be fourth overall. What do you think? Was my friend in Imre, did he have a valid point at all?
I think it was a lovely thing to say. I was delighted. I didn't even think that I was fourth. I think it's nice to get the recognition. I know all my friends who I saw at the finish line were like screaming that as well. So I was overjoyed to hear that. And I think it's all right to say it, you know. I think because especially it is a tough race, and to think that you got fourth overall, it is an achievement. And I guess when I do remember going past the gentleman who plays fifth overall, and like you know, like I know I guess I am against the women, but I'm also against other people as well, and who are running in the same race. So I think it's a valid point. I don't know.
Great. And tell me, what was there a bounce in your step, Mooran, for the couple of days afterwards, albeit a tired one, but I'm sure you must have been thrilled to have got the win, a big win like that as well, coming from the podium and coming from the debut years as well, back in 2022 and 2023. I'm sure that must have filled you with so much confidence and joy.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I was really, really hoping I would even just podium. I was like, oh my god, imagine if I could. And I was kind of trying to hype myself up that, you know, that it would be possible. I was overjoyed, and my parents were they were following me, and they were they were so shocked. Like last year, my mom was like, no more, please, no more 80Ks. But of course she was delighted when obviously she saw how happy I was, and of course they actually found out when they saw the Facebook post, I think, of the video. They were like, they were so shocked.
And Mooran, has that dared you to dream, for example, of, you know, we saw the World Championships were on 2 weeks ago, and the Irish team over there competing so well. Have you dreamt about that at all, you know, getting the green jersey, or trying to go for the green jersey, excuse me, over the next couple of years? Because again, a big win like that, sub 3 hour caliber, hopefully, athlete on the roads, that does suggest that, yeah, you would be in the mix for one of the long trail or ultra trails Irish teams in European Championships, World Championships. Have you been checking out the calendar for 2026 and 2027?
I was, to be fair, I've been following the World Champs, and like I was very aware they were on during the time I was doing Eco Trail, so I knew I probably had a better chance of winning because of that. But like I'd love obviously to prove myself, I guess, do more races and maybe be a little bit more focused on the trail running, because I never thought I'm like growing up, I was never someone who was winning things. Like I was in team sports and stuff like that, and I really enjoyed them. But running didn't come until probably COVID time, you know. So I've been definitely following it, and I'd love to try and prove myself in the field, I guess, of trail running in Ireland if I could. But I guess that is a dream.
No, absolutely. Well, keep an eye on the IMRA website. I think they have their AGMs towards the middle end of November, and then they publish their racing calendar for 2026, where you'll see the trial dates there, and where I reckon we might see it running for Ireland, hopefully in the next year or two. And where I've got three daughters, and I want my daughter to run like Muireann does in the final kilometer of an 80k race, hopefully sometime in the future. And where it was inspirational to see you with such a great win, running so well, and such a great ambassador for the sport of trail running, even though you mightn't realize it. It was brilliant to see in action. And we're in good luck with your sub-3 hour effort in a couple of weeks' time. I'll be keeping an eye out for your results. And thanks a million for sharing your story with us today.
Oh, no, thank you so much, Owen. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to chat here. Thank you.
Okay, best of luck. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Well, there we have it, guys. Hopefully you enjoyed that chat with Muireann, and she's helped and inspired you all to keep on chasing those dreams. A reminder too, before I go, to use the code FUELUP, uppercase or lowercase, for 10% off all of your sports nutrition and supplement needs on Irish store, newleafonline.ie, where Mountain Runner and UTMB finisher Mairead and the team will be more than happy to help you all out. For now, everybody get your running gear on. Let's go.